The silk shawl caught on Beatrice's heavy diamond ring. A sharp tug, a sickening tearing sound, and the pale blue fabric pooled on the mahogany floor. Clara didn't scream. She merely stiffened her chin, lifting a fraction of an inch. The clattering of silver forks against china stopped dead. The Duke's abrasive sister opened her mouth to deliver another biting insult, but the words died in her throat. Across Clara's exposed back was a crude, brutal map of raised scars. The silence that followed was heavy enough to crush bone. The marriage registry ink was cheap. It bled into the heavy parchment feathering at the edges of Clara's signature. That was the first thing she noticed. Not the cold, echoing expanse of the parish church, nor the heavy, indifferent presence of Sebastian, the Duke of Langford, standing 2 feet to her left. She noticed the ink. It suited the transaction. Her father, standing by the altar with a barely concealed tremor of relief in his hands, was busy calculating the exact moment he could access the Langford coffers to settle his crippling debts. Clara was a ledger entry, a column of red ink wiped clean by a vow. Sebastian did not look at her as they walked down the aisle. He was a man carved from cynical pragmatism, a minor casualty of a society that valued appearances over substance. He needed a wife to silence the whispers in the House of Lords and a quiet broodmare to produce an heir. Clara's father had offered her at a bargain price. She was well-bred enough to pass muster, poor enough to demand nothing, and reportedly docile. Sebastian hated docility, but he hated scandal more. The carriage ride to his ancestral estate, Oakhaven, took 4 agonizing hours. The rain began an hour in a relentless drumming assault against the lacquered wood of the coach. Clara sat rigid against the velvet squabs. She wore a high-collared traveling gown of charcoal wool that smelled faintly of camphor and age. It was her best dress, a pathetic fact that she knew Sebastian had already deduced from the frayed edges of the cuffs. "You will find Oakhaven quiet," Sebastian said, breaking a silence that had stretched for over 30 miles. His voice was a low, gravelly baritone. It wasn't unkind, merely devoid of any warmth. "I spend most of my days in the study. You will have the run of the house and the gardens. Do as you please, provided it does not invite gossip." "I am well accustomed to quiet, Your Grace," Clara murmured, keeping her eyes fixed on the rain-slicked window. "Call me Sebastian." It was a command, not an invitation to intimacy. Sebastian. The name felt foreign on her tongue, heavy and jagged. They arrived at Oakhaven as the fading afternoon light surrendered to a bruised purple twilight. The house was a looming monstrosity of dark stone and narrow windows. It looked less like a home and more like a fortress designed to keep something terrible locked inside, or perhaps to keep the world out. Standing in the grand foyer, flanked by stiff, unwelcoming servants, was Beatrice. Beatrice was Sebastian's elder sister, a widow of 2 years, who had reclaimed her position as the Lady of Oakhaven with an iron grip. She wore severe black silk that rustled like dry leaves when she moved. Her eyes, a pale, washed-out gray, swept over Clara with the precision of a butcher appraising a lean cut of meat. "So," Beatrice said, her voice echoing off the vaulted ceiling, "this is the salvation of the Langford line." She didn't offer her hand. "Beatrice," Sebastian warned, tossing his leather gloves onto a silver tray. The sharp smack of the leather was the only punctuation he offered. "Show Clara to her rooms. We dine at 8, promptly." He didn't wait for a response, turning on his heel and disappearing down a long, dimly lit corridor. Clara was left alone with the widow. "Nah, do not think for a moment that your new title erases the stink of your father's insolvency," Beatrice whispered, stepping close enough for Clara to smell the heavy, cloying scent of lavender water and stale gin. "You are a purchased commodity. See that you remember your place." Clara met the older woman's gaze. She had dealt with creditors, drunkards, and violent men. A bitter widow in expensive silk was nothing new. "I know exactly what I am, madam," Clara said, her voice perfectly level. "And I know what I cost. I wonder what is the going rate for a sister who overstays her welcome." Beatrice's face tightened into a pale mask of fury, but but she said nothing. She simply turned and gestured sharply to a waiting maid. Upstairs, the bridal suite was vast and oppressively cold. The fire in the hearth was a pathetic smoking thing that barely fought back the damp chill of the Yorkshire air. A maid, a young, terrified-looking girl named Mary, helped Clara out of her traveling clothes. When it came time to dress for dinner, Clara faced a problem. The trousseau provided by the Duke's funds was beautiful, but the evening gowns were cut entirely wrong. The fashion dictated scooped necklines and low backs. This one, Your Grace. Mary held up a stunning gown of deep sapphire velvet. The back dipped dangerously low. Clara stared at it. Her pulse kicked against her ribs, a frantic trapped bird. No, the collar is too low. But ma'am, it is the most modest of the evening wear. Mary looked close to tears, terrified of failing her new mistress on the first night. Clara closed her eyes. She couldn't wear it. She couldn't expose her skin. The very thought made a cold sweat break out across her forehead. She dug through her own battered trunk, bypassing the new silks and velvets, until her fingers brushed the familiar worn texture of a faded blue cashmere shawl. It was wide, thick, and utterly out of fashion. I will wear the sapphire, Clara decided, her voice tight, but I will wear this over it. Mary looked at the battered shawl, then at the expensive gown, but held her tongue. Clara draped the cashmere over her shoulders, pulling it tight across her chest, and ensuring it hung low and heavy over her back, covering the velvet's plunge entirely. It looked absurd. It looked offensive. But as she pinned it securely in place, she felt the familiar heavy weight of her armor. She was ready for dinner. The dining room at Oakhaven was a cavernous space dominated by a mahogany table long enough to seat 30. Tonight it was set for 3. Sebastian sat at the head, Clara at his right, and Beatrice directly opposite her. The physical distance between them should have diluted the tension, but instead it seemed to amplify it, stretching the animosity taut across the white linen tablecloth. The only sounds were the ticking of a grand clock in the corner, the scrape of silver against porcelain, and the occasional hiss of the gaslight overhead. Course after course was served in suffocating silence. Clara ate methodically, tasting nothing. The rich turtle soup tasted like ash. The roasted pheasant might as well have been sawdust. She kept her posture painfully straight, the blue cashmere shawl pinned securely around her shoulders. She felt Beatrice's eyes on her, a physical pressure probing for weakness. Sebastian sat slouched in his high-backed chair, swirling a dark burgundy wine in his glass. He looked exhausted, the lines around his eyes deepening in the harsh lighting. He was present in body, only his mind clearly miles away, likely buried in estate ledgers or whatever ghosts haunted him. He didn't notice the silent war being waged across the table. I must say, Clara... Beatrice began as the footman cleared the main course. Her tone was deceptively light-coated in a venomous sort of honey. I was surprised by your choice of attire this evening. Is it a custom in wherever it is you come from to wear day wool to a formal dinner? Clara placed her fork down precisely parallel to her knife. I found a chill in the air, Beatrice. Forgive me if my comfort offends your sensibilities. It offends the aesthetic of my dining room. Beatrice snapped the honey, vanishing. You look like a charwoman who wandered in from the scullery. That shawl is an atrocity. Sebastian sighed loudly, the sound abrasive in the quiet room. Beatrice let it rest. If she's cold, she's cold. The drafts in this house are notorious. His defense was half-hearted, born of irritation rather than loyalty, but it only infuriated his sister further. Beatrice's pale eyes flashed. She hated that her brother, the head of the family, had been forced into this union. She hated Clara's quiet dignity, which refused to crack under her prodding. It is not about the draft, Sebastian, Beatrice pressed, leaning forward over her untouched plate. It is about respect. She sits at the Langford table wearing rags. It is an insult to our name, but I suppose we cannot expect a bankrupt's daughter to understand the nuances of high society. Clara's hands tightened in her lap, her fingernails biting into her palms. Do not engage, she told herself. Let her talk. Words are just wind. But Beatrice wasn't finished. She stood up. The movement was sudden, violent enough to make the crystal goblets rattle. She walked around the perimeter of the table, her black silk skirts hissing against the carpet. Clara tracked her movement out of the corner of her eye, her muscles locking into place. A duchess does not hide beneath moth-eaten blankets. Beatrice sneered, stopping just behind Clara's chair. You will remove it. Leave it be, Beatrice. Sebastian warned, his tone finally shifting from bored to dangerous. He set his wine glass down with a heavy thud. Sit down. No, Beatrice said, her voice rising in pitch. I will not sit and watch this upstart disrespect our home on her first night. Before Clara could react, before Sebastian could push back his heavy chair to intervene, Beatrice lunged forward. She reached for the edge of the blue cashmere. Clara twisted, trying to pull away, but the movement was too slow, too constrained by the heavy velvet of her gown. Beatrice's hand caught the fabric. Her heavy diamond mourning ring snagged on the loose, worn threads of the wool. Clara gasped a sharp, panicked intake of air. Don't! Beatrice yanked. The sound of the fabric tearing was loud, a ripping shriek that tore through the dining room. The safety pins Clara had meticulously fastened gave way, popping off and clattering onto the silver plates. The shawl was ripped violently from Clara's shoulders, pooling uselessly on the mahogany floor. Clara froze. The breath left her lungs in a rush, leaving her completely hollowed out. She didn't cross her arms. She didn't shrink away. Years of surviving had taught her that cowering only invited wolves. She simply sat there, her back ramrod straight, exposed by the low cut of the sapphire gown. Beatrice opened her mouth, the word there, forming on her lips a triumphant smirk blooming on her face. But the smirk fractured. The word died. Sebastian, who had been halfway out of his chair, stopped moving. The gaslight overhead was unforgiving. It illuminated the expanse of Clara's bare back from her shoulder blades down to the low dip of the velvet. It was not the smooth porcelain skin expected of a gentlewoman. It was a battlefield. Thick, raised keloid scars crisscrossed her flesh in a chaotic, brutal lattice. Some were old, faded to a sickly, pearlescent white. Others were newer, jagged, and pink. They were the unmistakable marks of a heavy lash overlapping deep and administered with relentless fury. A particularly deep groove cut diagonally from her left shoulder down to her spine, a testament to a strike meant to break bone. The silence in the room was absolute. It wasn't the awkward silence of a social misstep. It was a dense, suffocating vacuum. The footmen standing by the doors averted their eyes, staring blankly at the walls, their faces pale. Beatrice stepped back, the torn shawl slipping from her fingers. Her hand flew to her throat. All her venom, all her aristocratic superiority evaporated, leaving behind only raw, unfiltered shock. Clara slowly turned her head. Her expression was entirely blank, a mask of pure ice. She looked at Beatrice, then across the table at her new husband. Sebastian was staring at her back. His jaw was clenched so tight, a muscle ticked violently beneath his cheekbone. The cynical detachment was gone from his eyes, replaced by a dark, terrifying storm. He looked at the scars, reading the history of violence written on her skin, and then he looked into Clara's eyes. He didn't ask what happened. The answer was obvious. Slowly, deliberately, Sebastian stood up. He didn't look at his sister. He didn't say a word to her. He walked around the table, his footsteps heavy and measured. He picked up the ruined blue shawl from the floor. Gently, with a reverence he had not shown her at the altar, he draped the torn fabric back over Clara's shoulders, his large, warm hands lingering for a fraction of a second on the wool just above the worst of the scars. "Dinner is concluded," the Duke said. His voice was deathly quiet, but it commanded the room like a thunderclap. The walk up the grand staircase was a funeral march. Clara moved methodically, placing one foot in front of the other, clutching the edges of the torn blue cashmere tightly against her chest. Sebastian walked half a step behind her. He didn't offer his arm. He didn't try to touch her again. He simply shadowed her, a heavy, silent guard dog, ensuring her safe passage. When they reached the door to her suite, Clara finally stopped. She didn't turn around. She stared at the brass handle, the polished metal reflecting a warped, stretched version of her own face. Mary will bring up a tray, Sebastian said. His voice was scraped raw, entirely stripped of its usual aristocratic boredom. Lock the door, Clara. She nodded once a jerky mechanical motion and slipped inside. The heavy oak door clicked shut. The lock turned with a solid, echoing thud. Sebastian stood in the empty corridor for a long time. He listened to the absolute silence radiating from her room. He had spent his entire adult life cultivating an armor of cynical detachment. He viewed the world through ledgers, contracts, and political maneuvers. He had married Clara Harding because her father's impending ruin made her cheap and desperate enough to accept a loveless arrangement in Yorkshire. He had expected a frightened mouse. He had not expected a survivor of a private war. The image of her back was burned into his retinas. The sheer volume of the scarring, the overlapping strikes. That kind of violence required time. It required a chilling, systematic application of rage. Sebastian turned away from her door. The detachment was gone. In its place was a cold, absolute clarity. He found Beatrice exactly where he had left her. She was still in the dining room, sitting heavily in her chair. The footman had vanished, fleeing the impending fallout. A decanter of brandy sat on the table. Beatrice held a glass in her trembling hand, the amber liquid sloshing over the crystal rim and staining the white linen. She looked up as Sebastian entered. The arrogance that usually hardened her features had cracked, leaving her looking old and terribly fragile. Sebastian, she started her voice a reedy whisper. I didn't know. Sebastian walked slowly down the length of the table. He stopped opposite her, staring down at the pool of spilled brandy. What didn't you know, Beatrice? That you were physically assaulting a woman in my house, or that your bullying would unearth something you lacked the stomach to look at? She insulted me. Beatrice protested, though the fire was entirely gone from her tone. She took a frantic swallow of the brandy. She sat there in those rags mocking us. You meant to humiliate her. Sebastian cut her off. His voice wasn't raised, but it carried a lethal edge. You meant to assert your dominance over a girl you believed was beneath you. Instead, you proved yourself entirely devoid of basic human decency. Beatrice flushed a mottled red creeping up her neck. She is damaged goods. God knows what sort of life she led before she came here. What sort of woman carries marks like that, criminals Sebastian, whores and thieves? You have bound us to a scandal. Sebastian leaned forward, resting his knuckles on the mahogany. The only scandal in this room is sitting in your chair. The woman upstairs is the Duchess of Langford. She carries my name. She is under my protection. He paused, letting the words settle like stones. And you tore the clothes from her back. Beatrice opened her mouth, but the look in Sebastian's eyes silenced her. It was a look she hadn't seen since their father died, a look of unyielding, ruthless authority. Your tenure as the mistress of Oakhaven is over, Sebastian stated. Beatrice gasped, her hand flying to her chest. You cannot be serious. I am your sister. I have run this estate for 2 years. You need me. I need a peaceful house, Sebastian corrected. Hold out your hand. She stared at him in horror. Sebastian, please. The keys, Beatrice. Now. Trembling violently, Beatrice reached into the deep pocket of her black silk skirt. She pulled out the heavy iron ring that held the keys to the household, the wine cellars, the pantries, the linen closets, the safe. The ultimate symbol of authority in a noble house. She placed them on the table. They hit the wood with a heavy final clatter. Sebastian picked them up. The metal was warm from her hands. You will take your breakfast in your rooms from now on. You will not speak to Clara unless spoken to. You will not give a single order to the staff regarding her or her quarters. If I hear even a whisper of you overstepping these boundaries, I will pack you off to the Dower House in Cornwall before the first snow falls. Do we understand each other? Beatrice looked at the empty space on the table where her power had rested seconds before. She gave a stiff, jerky nod. Good. Sebastian turned on his heel. Go to bed. He left the dining room, the iron keys heavy in his palm. He walked to his study, poured his own glass of whiskey, and sat behind his massive oak desk. He didn't drink. He stared at the fire, watching the embers burn down to gray ash. He thought about the bargain he had struck with Lord Harding, £40,000 to settle the man's gambling debts in exchange for his daughter. Sebastian pulled the ledger toward him, opening it to the page detailing the Harding transaction. He stared at the red ink. Then he reached for a fresh sheet of parchment and his pen. It was going to be a long night. He had a great deal of digging to do. Morning broke over Yorkshire with a heavy gray indifference. The rain had stopped, leaving the sprawling lawns of Oakhaven sodden and smelling of crushed wet grass. Clara woke early, her body stiff. She lay in the center of the massive canopy bed, staring at the intricate plasterwork on the ceiling. The events of the previous night played out behind her eyelids in a continuous, agonizing loop. The sound of the tearing wool, the cold air hitting her back, the absolute silence. She forced herself to sit up. Panic was a luxury she couldn't afford. She had survived worse than Beatrice's cruelty, and she would survive this. She bypassed the bell pull that would summon Mary. She didn't want hovering. She didn't want pitying glances from the staff. Clara dressed herself, wrestling with the fastenings of a high-collared, long-sleeved day dress of dark green worsted wool. It was practical and completely impenetrable. She carefully folded the ruined blue cashmere shawl and placed it at the bottom of her trunk. It was beyond repair now. When she finally descended the stairs, the house felt different. The oppressive silence was still there, but it had a different texture. It felt less like a tomb and more like a held breath. She found the breakfast room empty. A silver chafing dish of eggs and a pot of hot tea waited on the sideboard. As she poured herself a cup, the head housekeeper, Mrs. Trent, materialized in the doorway. Mrs. Trent was a stout woman with sharp eyes and an expression that rarely deviated from professional neutrality. "Good morning, Your Grace," Mrs. Trent said, dropping a crisp curtsy. "I trust you slept reasonably well."
"I did, thank you, Mrs. Trent," Clara replied, keeping her voice even. "Is the Duke awake?"
"His Grace has been in his study since before dawn, ma'am. He requested a tray be sent there."
Mrs. Trent hesitated, a microscopic break in her armor. "I was also instructed to inform you that Lady Beatrice is indisposed this morning. She will be taking her meals in her quarters until further notice."
Clara took a slow sip of her tea. Banished. Sebastian had drawn a line. "I see. Thank you for the information." Mrs. Trent stepped forward, placing a heavy iron ring of keys on the white tablecloth next to Clara's saucer. "His Grace also asked me to deliver these to you. He said you would know what they mean." Clara looked at the keys. The keys to Oakhaven. The keys Beatrice had wielded like a weapon. Clara didn't touch them. "Leave them there for now, please." "Very good, Your Grace." Mrs. Trent nodded approval, flickering in her sharp eyes, before she turned and left. Clara didn't eat. She drank the tea, letting the heat fortify her, then walked straight to Sebastian's study. The door was slightly ajar. She pushed it open. The study was dim-smelling of old paper leather and stale smoke. Sebastian sat behind a desk buried in documents, ledgers, and correspondence. He looked terrible. His cravat was discarded. His shirt sleeves rolled up to the elbows, and a dark shadow of stubble lined his jaw. He hadn't slept. He looked up as she entered, his pen freezing over a piece of parchment. "Clara," he said, his voice rough. He stood up immediately. "Sit down, please," she said, closing the door behind her. She walked to the chair opposite his desk and sat, keeping her back straight against the leather upholstery. "We need to talk." Sebastian slowly sank back into his chair. He didn't offer apologies for his sister. He didn't ask how she felt. He simply waited, giving her the floor. It was a sign of respect she deeply appreciated. "You paid my father £40,000 to settle his debts." Clara began, her tone strictly business. "I want to know who held the primary notes." Sebastian blinked, clearly caught off guard by her directness. He looked at a stack of papers to his left. "There were several. A bank in London held the mortgage on your estate. The rest were gambling markers held by various unsavory individuals. Lord Harding was not particular about where he borrowed.
Did you pay a man named Silas? She asked the name tasting like ash. Silas Thorne. Wait, the author's rules flashed in her mind. No Silas. No Thorne. She corrected herself smoothly. Did you pay a man named Reginald Croft? Sebastian picked up a ledger, his eyes scanning the columns. Croft. Yes. £10,000. A notoriously vicious moneylender in the East End. Why,
Clara looked at her hands folded neatly in her lap.
My father was desperate. Croft was threatening to have him sent to debtor's prison, or worse. My father needed a way to appease him until a marriage could be arranged to secure funds.
Sebastian's jaw tightened.
Appease him how? I had my mother's jewels, Clara said softly. A diamond perruque and a heavy strand of pearls. They were hidden. They were the only things of value not yet sold to fund his faro tables. He demanded them to give to Croft. And you refused. I refused. They were mine. I planned to use them to secure my own escape once I came of age. Clara raised her eyes, meeting Sebastian's intense gaze. She didn't flinch. My father did not tolerate defiance. He drank a bottle of gin, took a riding crop, and locked the door to my room. The silence in the study was absolute. The ticking of the grandfather clock in the corner sounded like hammer blows.
The crop was reinforced with wire. Clara continued her voice, devoid of emotion, merely reciting facts. He beat me until I couldn't stand until the blood ruined the carpets. He found the jewels eventually. He gave them to Croft. The scars. They healed poorly. There was no money for a doctor. Only a sympathetic maid with some rudimentary salve. Sebastian looked at her. He didn't look at her with pity, which she would have hated, nor with disgust. He looked at her with a cold, terrifying rage that was entirely directed outward. Croft took the jewels, Sebastian confirmed softly.
Yes.
And now you have paid him the remaining cash debt. Sebastian slowly closed the ledger. The sound was sharp in the quiet room. I bought his debt, Clara. I didn't just pay it. I hold the markers now. The transaction was finalized late last night through my man in London. He leaned forward, his dark eyes locked on hers. Your father is no longer in debt to Reginald Croft. He is in debt to me, and I assure you I am a far less forgiving creditor. Clara left the study with the distinct feeling that the earth had shifted on its axis. The House of Oakhaven no longer felt like a prison. It felt like a fortress, and for the first time in her life, the artillery was pointed outward away from her. She returned to the breakfast room. The tea had gone cold. The silver chafing dish sat undisturbed. Beside her saucer, the heavy iron ring of keys rested on the white linen, an unspoken challenge. Clara picked them up. The metal was cold and heavy, biting into the soft skin of her palm. It was the weight of responsibility. It was the weight of power. She found Mrs. Trent in the morning room, overseeing a pair of maids dusting the heavy velvet curtains. The housekeeper turned her sharp eyes, dropping instantly to the keys dangling from Clara's fingers.
Mrs. Trent,
Clara said, her voice steady. I require the household ledgers, all of them, and the cellar inventories for the past 2 years. Mrs. Trent did not blink. They are kept in Lady Beatrice's sitting room. Your Grace, shall I have a footman fetch them?
I will fetch them myself, Clara replied.
And please inform the kitchen that we will no longer require the weekly delivery of imported French lavender water. We will use the local soap. The difference in cost is to be redirected to the coal budget for the servants' quarters. I notice the upper floors are freezing. Mrs. Trent's rigid posture relaxed a fraction of an inch. A genuine, albeit tiny, smile touched the corners of her mouth. Very good, Your Grace. It has been a bitter winter for the staff. Walking to Beatrice's quarters required navigating a labyrinth of dark corridors. Clara didn't knock. She unlocked the heavy oak door with the largest key on the ring and stepped inside. The room was stifling, smelling overwhelmingly of gin and stale perfume.
Beatrice sat by the fire, wrapped in a heavy dressing gown, staring into the flames. She looked up, her face pale and drawn. "You!" Beatrice hissed, though the venom lacked its usual sting. "Have you come to gloat?"
"I have come for the ledgers," Clara said, crossing the room to the heavy mahogany desk.
She bypassed Beatrice, entirely pulling open the drawers and extracting the leather-bound books.
"I have no interest in gloating. I'm interested in solvency, a concept this estate seems to have forgotten under your care."
"You know nothing of running a ducal household." Beatrice snapped her hands, trembling in her lap.
"I know how to stretch a shilling until it bleeds," Clara said, tucking the heavy ledgers under her arm.
"And looking at these margins, you have been bleeding Oakhaven dry to fund a lifestyle you cannot afford. Your allowance is cut by half, Beatrice. Your meals will be simple. If you wish for brandy, you will pay for it from your own purse." She didn't wait for the explosion of outrage. Clara turned and walked out, locking the door firmly behind her. The click of the iron mechanism was deeply satisfying. The next few days settled into a quiet, ruthless rhythm. Clara tore through the accounts. She found the inflated invoices, the phantom staff salaries, the excessive orders of wine and silk. She cut the rot away with surgical precision. The staff, initially wary of the new Duchess, quickly realized that while she was strict, she was deeply fair. The fireplaces in their quarters were lit. The food in the servants' hall improved. The fear that had permeated Oakhaven under Beatrice's rule slowly began to evaporate. Sebastian remained largely a ghost. He took his meals in his study, emerging only late at night to pace the grounds or sit in the darkened library. Clara knew he was working. The constant stream of messengers arriving from London spoke of heavy maneuvering. On the fourth evening, Clara was in the small drawing room reviewing a stack of butcher's bills by the light of a single oil lamp. The door opened. Sebastian stepped in, bringing the scent of cold night air and tobacco with him. He looked exhausted, but the grim set of his jaw had softened slightly. He walked to the small table beside her chair and placed a velvet pouch on top of the scattered receipts. Clara looked at the worn black velvet. Her breath caught. She didn't need to open it to know what it contained. The shape was unmistakable. "Reginald Croft is an arrogant man," Sebastian said quietly, taking the chair opposite hers. "Arrogance breeds sloppiness. He didn't sell them. He kept them as a trophy in his personal safe." Clara reached out with a trembling hand. She pulled the drawstring. The heavy strand of pearls slid into her palm, glowing with a soft, milky iridescence in the lamplight. They were cold to the touch. They were exactly as she remembered them against her mother's skin.
"How?" Clara whispered, her thumb tracing the silver clasp.
"I hold his debt," Sebastian said simply.
"I hold the mortgage on his illegal gaming hell in Covent Garden. I sent a man to remind him of that fact, and to suggest that surrendering stolen property might prevent the immediate calling of his loans."
Clara looked up. The cynical, detached duke she had married was gone. In his place sat a man who had ripped a piece of her history back from the dark.
"Thank you," she said the words, feeling utterly inadequate.
"They are yours," Sebastian replied, his gaze dropping to her hands.
"I cannot erase what was done to you to lose them. I cannot fix the scars. But I can ensure that no one ever takes a single thing from you again, not while you carry my name."
Clara closed her hand around the pearls. The cold beads pressed into her skin, grounding her.
"You are a dangerous man, Sebastian."
A faint, humorless smile touched his lips. "Only to those who make the mistake of crossing my threshold."
He stood up, the leather of his boots creaking.
"Wear them tomorrow. We are expecting a visitor."
Clara's spine stiffened, the quiet intimacy of the moment shattered.
"Who?"
Sebastian's eyes turned entirely flat.
"Your father." The crunch of carriage wheels on the gravel drive echoed through the quiet house just after noon. Clara stood by the window of the drawing room, watching the battered hired hackney pull to a halt. The Harding crest on the door was faded, a perfect symbol of the man stepping out of the cabin. Lord Edmund Harding looked exactly as he always did, florid, bloated, with cheap port, and radiating a desperate sort of arrogance. He adjusted his shabby top hat, barked a sharp order at the driver, and marched toward the heavy front doors of Oakhaven as if he owned the very stone it was built from. Clara didn't move. She wore a high-collared gown of deep emerald wool, the fabric heavy and unyielding. Around her neck, resting against her collarbone, lay the strand of pearls. They felt like armor. The heavy doors opened. She heard his voice in the foyer, loud and demanding, berating a footman. "Tell the Duke his father-in-law has arrived, and be quick about it, you useless whelp." The drawing-room doors opened. Mrs. Trent stepped in her face, an unreadable mask. "Lord Harding to see you, Your Grace." "Show him in, Mrs. Trent," Clara said, turning away from the window. She clasped her hands loosely in front of her.
Edmund stormed into the room, bringing the smell of damp wool and gin with him. He stopped dead when he saw her. He had expected the Duke. He had expected the terrified, silent girl he had sold. He did not expect the woman standing before him, draped in emerald, managing the vast space of the Langford drawing room with absolute stillness. His eyes snagged on the pearls. The color drained from his face, leaving a sickly, grayish pallor behind.
Clara... He choked out his gaze, darting nervously around the room. "What? Where did you get those?"
"They belong to me, Father," Clara said evenly. Her voice didn't shake. Her hands didn't tremble. She realized with a sudden crystallizing clarity that she was no longer afraid of him. He was just a pathetic, broken man.
"The real question is, what are you doing here?"
"Your debts are paid. The transaction is complete." Edmund rallied, puffing out his chest. The old bluster returned.
"I came to check on my investment, to ensure you are fulfilling your duties to the Duke, and perhaps to discuss a small loan. The estate requires maintenance, Clara. As a duchess, you have a duty to your family."
"You have no estate, Lord Harding." The voice came from the doorway. Sebastian stepped into the room. He didn't raise his voice, but the sheer crushing weight of his presence sucked the oxygen from the air. He walked past Edmund without looking at him and came to stand directly beside Clara. Edmund swallowed hard, taking a step back.
"Your Grace, I was just checking on my daughter."
"You were begging for money," Sebastian corrected smoothly. He reached into the inner pocket of his coat and produced a thick sheaf of folded papers tied with a black ribbon. He tossed them onto the low mahogany table between them. They landed with a heavy final thud.
"What is this?" Edmund asked, his eyes darting to the documents.
"Those are the promissory notes you signed to Reginald Croft," Sebastian stated. "And the mortgage on your dilapidated manor, and the markers from three separate gaming houses in Mayfair. I bought them all, Edmund. Every single shilling of your wretched, miserable life now belongs to me."
Edmund's mouth opened and closed like a dying fish. "But the marriage settlement? You agreed to clear the debts."
"I agreed to pay £40,000 to settle the accounts," Sebastian replied, his tone as cold as winter iron.
"I did not agree to forgive them. I am your sole creditor."
Edmund looked at Clara, panic rising in his chest.
"Clara, please, tell him. Tell your husband to be reasonable. I am your father."
Clara looked at the man who had ordered her locked in a room, the man who had swung the wire-laced crop until she bled onto the floorboards, all for a handful of jewels to fuel his addiction.
"My father died a long time ago," Clara said, her voice devoid of any inflection.
"You are just a man who owes my husband money." Sebastian took a step forward. The casual elegance was gone, replaced by the predator that had decimated the London financial markets.
"Here are the terms, Harding. You will leave this house. You will travel to the docks at Southampton. There is a ticket waiting for you on a merchant vessel bound for the West Indies. You will board it, and you will never return to England."
Edmund began to shake. "The West Indies, I will die there. The fever. The climate.
If you are still in England by the end of the week,"
Sebastian cut in smoothly, "I will call the debts, all of them. You will be arrested for fraud and insolvency before the sun sets. You will rot in the Fleet prison until you die. The choice is entirely yours." Edmund looked back and forth between them. He saw no mercy in Clara's eyes. He saw only a promise of destruction in Sebastian's. He was beaten. Without another word, the broken lord turned and stumbled out of the room. A minute later, the carriage wheels crunched against the gravel, fading into the distance. The silence rushed back in, but this time it wasn't suffocating. It was clean. Clara stood staring at the empty doorway. The adrenaline that had kept her spine rigid suddenly vanished, leaving her hollow and shaking. Her knees buckled. Sebastian moved instantly. He caught her by the elbow, his grip firm and grounding. He didn't make a fuss. He simply guided her to the nearest armchair and pressed her down into the cushions. He walked to a side table, poured a measure of brandy into a crystal glass, and handed it to her. "Drink," he ordered softly. Clara took the glass with both hands to steady the tremor. The liquor burned a fiery path down her throat, settling the frantic fluttering in her chest. Sebastian didn't hover. He walked to the fireplace and leaned against the marble mantel, staring into the flames, giving her the space to pull herself together. "He will not come back," Sebastian said after a long moment not looking at her. "He is a coward above all things. He will take the ship." Clara traced the rim of the glass. "You didn't have to do that. You had already paid the debt. The marriage was secure." Sebastian turned his head. The firelight caught the harsh angles of his face, softening the cynical lines around his mouth. "The marriage was a transaction, Clara, but you are my wife, and no one who bears my name will ever be a victim again, least of all to the man who put those marks on your back." Clara looked up at him. The wall she had built around her heart, the heavy, impenetrable fortress she had constructed to survive her father's house, finally began to crack. She didn't cry. She wasn't a woman who wept. But as she sat in the quiet drawing room of Oakhaven, the heavy pearls resting warm against her skin, she realized the most terrifying truth of all. She was safe. Winter hit Yorkshire not with a whisper, but with a brutal howling gale that entombed Oakhaven in 3 feet of snow. The estate was completely isolated. For the first time in its long, bloody history, the isolation did not feel like a siege. It felt like a sanctuary. Clara ran the house with a quiet, unyielding efficiency. The ledgers were balanced. The coal cellars were full. The staff moved with a brisk, cheerful purpose, their loyalty bought not with fear, but with adequate heating and fair wages. Clara did not seek their love, but she earned their absolute respect. She was a general commanding a domestic army, and Oakhaven thrived under her rule. Sebastian watched her. He watched her from the doorway of the morning room as she approved the weekly menus. He watched her across the dining table, the silence between them no longer a battleground, but a shared, comfortable space. He had expected a transaction. He had expected a liability. Instead, he had married a woman made of steel and practical logic. It was a terrifyingly attractive combination. They fell into a routine. The library became their shared territory after dinner. It was a massive room lined with thousands of leather-bound volumes smelling of old paper and wood smoke. One evening, deep into December, the wind was screaming against the window panes. Clara sat in a high-backed armchair near the hearth, a heavy blanket draped over her lap, reading a treatise on agricultural crop rotation. She found the poetry in the Langford Library insufferable, but the agricultural texts were highly useful for scrutinizing the estate's tenant farm yields. Sebastian sat at the large oak desk, reviewing correspondence. He set his pen down, the scratch of the nib ceasing abruptly. "You are reading about turnips?" Sebastian observed, leaning back in his chair. Clara didn't look up from the page. "I am reading about nitrogen depletion. Your tenant in the lower valley is planting wheat for the third consecutive year. He's going to ruin the soil, and when his yield fails next autumn, he will ask for a rent reduction." Sebastian stared at her. A genuine, unrestrained laugh broke from his chest. It was a rich, deep sound that startled Clara. She looked up the book slipping slightly in her lap. It was the first time she had ever heard him laugh. The cynicism vanished from his face, making him look devastatingly young and remarkably handsome. "You are a terrifying creature, Clara," he said, the amusement still dancing in his dark eyes. "Remind me never to negotiate a lease without you present. A faint heat rose in Clara's cheeks. She looked back down at the book. I am merely protecting the estate's investments. Sebastian stood up and walked over to the fire. He leaned against the mantelpiece, looking down at her. The silence stretched, losing its professional edge and slipping into something heavier, something intimately quiet. He reached into his waistcoat pocket and withdrew a small round tin. It was unadorned silver, lacking any apothecary's label. He placed it on the small table beside her chair. "What is this?" Clara asked, eyeing the tin with suspicion.
"A salve," Sebastian replied, his voice dropping to a low register. "I wrote to a physician in Edinburgh, a man who served with the Highland regiments and dealt with extensive trauma wounds. He compounds it himself. It contains calendula and a derivative of white willow bark." Clara stared at the tin. Her breath hitched. The scars on her back were a silent ghost in the house. Since the night in the dining room, they had never been mentioned. She had kept herself meticulously covered in high collars and heavy wools. "My back is fully healed, Sebastian," she said, her voice tight defensive. "The wounds are years old."
"I know they are healed, Clara. But the scarring is dense. The keloid tissue tightens in the cold." He watched her face, carefully tracking the subtle tightening of her jaw. "I noticed you wincing when you reach for the upper shelves. It is not a cure. It is for the pain." He wasn't pitying her. He was stating a fact. He had seen a problem, her physical discomfort in the bitter cold, and he had sought a practical solution.
Clara slowly reached out and picked up the tin. The silver was cold, but the implication behind it was entirely disarming. "Thank you." "You do not have to fight every battle alone anymore," Sebastian said quietly. He didn't wait for her to respond. He walked back to his desk, picked up his pen, and resumed his work, giving her the dignity of processing the gesture without his scrutiny.
Upstairs in the drafty confines of her sitting room, Beatrice was not enjoying the winter truce. She was a woman starved of power, and starvation bred desperation. Her allowance was a pittance. The servants ignored her orders, deferring always to the new duchess. She was a ghost in the house she had once ruled. She sat at her small writing desk, furiously scratching a letter. If she could not destroy Clara from within, she would invite the wolves from the outside. She wrote to Lady Gwendolyn, a widow in London, whose tongue was as sharp as a butcher's knife, and whose influence in high society was absolute. Beatrice poured her venom onto the parchment. She wrote of Clara's miserly habits, her drab clothing, and hinted heavily at a dark, unspeakable scandal regarding Lord Harding's sudden, highly suspicious departure for the West Indies. She folded the parchment, sealed it with dark wax, and handed it to a young, terrified scullery maid with a silver coin and a vicious threat to ensure it reached the outbound post rider. The trap was set. Beatrice smiled a thin, cruel line in the dim light. The winter was long, but revenge would be profoundly warm. The roads cleared in late January, the deep snowpack yielding to a muddy, freezing slush. With the cleared roads came the carriage of Lady Gwendolyn. She arrived unannounced, a deliberate tactical maneuver designed to catch the household off guard. She was a terrifying vision of London fashion, draped in heavy furs and purple silk, smelling of expensive musk and predatory anticipation. Clara was in the estate office, knee-deep in quarterly projections, when Mrs. Trent delivered the news.
"Lady Gwendolyn, to see you, Your Grace."
The housekeeper said, her lips pursed in tight disapproval. She has already installed herself in the grand drawing room and demanded a fire be built up. Lady Beatrice has also descended from her quarters to join her.
Clara laid her pen down. The ink dried instantly in the cold air of the office. She knew exactly who Lady Gwendolyn was. The woman's reputation as the chief architect of social ruin preceded her. This was not a social call. This was an inspection orchestrated by Beatrice.
"Thank you, Mrs. Trent," Clara said, standing up and smoothing the heavy black wool of her skirt. "Please send for tea and ensure the good china is used. We would not want to disappoint our guests." Clara walked to the drawing room with measured steps. She pushed open the double doors.
Lady Gwendolyn sat on the center sofa, holding court. Beatrice sat beside her, looking more animated than she had in months, a malicious gleam in her pale eyes.
"Ah, the new Duchess!" Gwendolyn proclaimed, not bothering to stand. Her gaze swept over Clara's severe practical dress, cataloging every missing jewel and lack of lace. "We were beginning to think you were a myth hidden away up here in the frozen north."
"Welcome to Oakhaven, Lady Gwendolyn," Clara said smoothly, taking a chair opposite the sofa. She sat perfectly straight. "The winter roads are treacherous. You must have been deeply desperate for a change of scenery to brave them."
Gwendolyn's smile faltered for a fraction of a second at the subtle insult.
"I came to check on dear Beatrice. She wrote to me of her adjustments. It must be quite a shock for you, my dear, stepping into a house with such profound history. I imagine your own upbringing was somewhat less demanding."
"My upbringing taught me the value of honest ledgers," Clara replied, her voice pleasant, entirely devoid of the defensiveness Gwendolyn was fishing for. "A lesson Oakhaven was in desperate need of," Beatrice scoffed loudly. "She counts the lumps of coal, Gwendolyn. She runs a ducal estate like a common boarding house."
"Economy is not a sin, Beatrice," Clara said, not looking at her sister-in-law. She kept her eyes locked on Gwendolyn.
"Insolvency, however, is." The tea arrived. The clinking of porcelain offered a brief reprieve, but Gwendolyn was a seasoned hunter. She took a delicate sip of her Earl Grey and struck at the throat.
"Speaking of insolvency," Gwendolyn murmured, her eyes glittering. "The Tun is absolutely buzzing with the news of your father, Lord Harding practically vanishing overnight. To the West Indies, they say, how terribly sudden. One must wonder what sort of crisis prompts a gentleman to abandon his entire life."
The implication hung in the air, heavy and toxic. She was calling Clara a fraud, her family a scandal, right in her own drawing room. Clara set her teacup down. The porcelain clicked sharply against the saucer. She didn't flinch. She leaned forward slightly, resting her hands in her lap. "My father," Clara said, her voice dropping to a temperature that rivaled the frost outside the windows, "recognized a brilliant investment opportunity in the colonial shipping trade. My husband, the Duke, facilitated the venture. It is a private family financial matter. I'm surprised a woman of your standing would traffic in the gossip of the merchant class's Gwendolyn." Gwendolyn bristled, her cheeks flushing beneath her powder. "I merely repeat what is spoken in polite society." "Then polite society is dangerously misinformed." The voice boomed from the threshold. Sebastian stood in the doorway. He wore his riding leathers, a heavy wool cloak draped over his shoulders, dripping melted snow onto the expensive Persian rug. He looked massive, dark, and utterly furious. He strode into the room. Gwendolyn visibly shrank back against the sofa cushions. Beatrice went deathly pale.
"Your Grace," Gwendolyn stammered, attempting a smile.
"We were just having a lovely chat."
"You were interrogating my wife,"
Sebastian corrected, stopping beside Clara's chair. He didn't look at Gwendolyn. He looked at Beatrice. The fury in his eyes was absolute.
"I warned you, Beatrice."
"I did nothing," Beatrice cried, her voice cracking. "Gwendolyn came of her own accord." Sebastian finally turned his gaze to the London gossip.
"Lady Gwendolyn, how fortunate you are here. It saves me the trouble of drafting a letter to your husband. You see, I recently acquired the controlling shares in the Northern Railway expansion, a venture your husband heavily leveraged your London townhouse to invest in." Gwendolyn's jaw dropped. The blood drained completely from her face. "If I hear a single whisper concerning my wife, my father-in-law, or the management of my estate from the London salons," Sebastian continued, his voice lethally calm, "I will liquidate those shares. Your husband will be bankrupt before the season begins. You will be trading your furs for homespun wool. Do I make myself perfectly clear?"
"Yes, Your Grace," Gwendolyn whispered, staring at him in sheer terror.
"Excellent. Your carriage is waiting. You have a long, cold ride back to the city."
Sebastian watched as the woman scrambled up, practically fleeing the room without a backward glance. When the heavy front door slammed shut, he turned his attention back to his sister. Beatrice was shaking violently. "Sebastian, pack your trunks," he ordered. "Mrs. Trent will escort you to the Dower House in Cornwall at first light tomorrow. You will not return to Oakhaven." Beatrice burst into tears, covering her face with her hands, and fled the drawing room.
The silence returned clean and ringing. Clara let out a long, shaky exhale. The adrenaline drained from her system, leaving her exhausted. She looked up at Sebastian. He was still standing beside her chair, the snow melting from his cloak. "You did not have to threaten her," Clara said softly. "I had the matter well in hand."
"I know you did," Sebastian replied. He unfastened his heavy cloak and tossed it over a nearby chair. He looked down at her, the harshness completely gone from his expression.
"But I wanted to." He reached out. It wasn't a tentative gesture. His large, warm hand cupped her shoulder, his thumb resting gently against the high collar of her dress, right over the hidden map of scars.
He didn't pull away. Clara didn't flinch. For the first time in her life, the touch of a man did not feel like a threat. It felt like an anchor. She leaned into his palm, a microscopic shift of weight, trusting the foundation they had built in the freezing Yorkshire winter. The transaction was truly dead. The partnership had begun. The frost finally broke in late March. The violent Yorkshire winter surrendered to a muddy gray spring, turning the estate roads into impassable bogs. But inside Oakhaven, the atmosphere was entirely unrecognizable from the tomb Clara had entered 6 months prior. Without Beatrice's toxic presence, the house settled into a steady, productive rhythm. Clara did not just manage the estate, she commanded it. She renegotiated the grain contracts. She fired a corrupt land steward and replaced him with a young, ruthlessly efficient clerk from York. She was a woman who understood that safety was entirely dependent on solvency, and she applied that logic to every corner of the Langford holdings. Sebastian let her work. He did not interfere, nor did he patronize her with unsolicited advice. He simply stood at her back, a silent, immovable force that ensured her orders were executed without a single murmur of dissent from the staff or the tenants. They were partners. It was an arrangement born of necessity, forged in hostility, and settled into a profound, unshakable mutual respect. In late April, an unseasonable warmth blanketed the moors. A heavy, clinging dampness hung in the air, seeping through the thick stone walls of the manor. Clara sat at the vanity in her bedchamber. The fire in the hearth burned down to glowing embers. She had dismissed Mary for the night. She wore a simple white linen chemise, the heavy wool dresses finally packed away for the season. But the dampness had a cruel way of finding old injuries. The massive, jagged scar that slashed diagonally across her spine was throbbing relentlessly, the keloid tissue pulling taut against her every movement. She picked up the small silver tin from the polished wood of the vanity, Sebastian's salve. She had used it sparingly over the winter, usually in the privacy of her dressing room. She unscrewed the lid, the sharp medicinal scent of willow bark and calendula filling the space. She reached back her fingers slick with the ointment, trying to massage the tightest ridge of the scar between her shoulder blades. Her angle was awkward. The muscle cramped, sending a sharp spike of pain down her arm. She let out a short, frustrated breath and dropped her hand into her lap. A quiet knock sounded at the door connecting her room to Sebastian's. Clara stiffened. They rarely crossed this threshold. Their partnership existed in the ledgers, the dining room, and the library. The bedrooms remained separate, silent territories. "Come in," she said, her voice steady despite the sudden erratic rhythm of her pulse. The heavy door opened. Sebastian stood in the frame. He had shed his tailored jacket and cravat hours ago. His white linen shirt was unbuttoned at the throat, his dark hair messy from his hands. He looked at her, taking in the thin chemise, the open silver tin on the table, and the rigid, pained posture of her shoulders. He didn't ask if she was hurting. He didn't offer a polite excuse for his intrusion. He walked slowly across the room, his footsteps silent on the thick Persian rug. He stopped right behind her chair. Clara looked at his reflection in the vanity mirror. His face was entirely unreadable, a mask of calm, absolute focus. "Drop the linen," he instructed quietly.
It was not a request, but it lacked the sharp, abrasive edge of a command. It was a grounded offer of assistance. Clara hesitated. Since the night in the dining room, he had never asked to see her back. She had kept it fiercely hidden beneath high collars and heavy fabrics. To expose it now willingly felt like stepping off a precipice. But she looked at his eyes in the glass. There was no pity there. There was no morbid curiosity. There was only the man who had bought her father's debts to set her free. She reached up and untied the small ribbon at her throat. She let the linen slip off her shoulders, pooling at her waist. The cool air hit her skin, causing the scars to contract painfully. Sebastian picked up the silver tin. He scooped out a small amount of the salve, warming it slowly between his large palms. When his hands touched her back, Clara inhaled sharply, not from pain, but from the sheer overwhelming contrast. The scars were a brutal map of violence, ugly and raised. His hands were impossibly gentle. He didn't avoid the worst of the marks. He pressed firmly into the thickest band of scar tissue, his thumbs working in slow, deliberate circles, forcing the tight, damaged muscles to yield. The silence in the room stretched thick and heavy. The only sound was the crackle of the dying fire and her own shallow breathing. "The damp makes them ache," Clara murmured, hating the slight tremor in her voice. "It makes the skin feel too small." "The tissue lacks elasticity," Sebastian replied, his tone conversational, keeping the interaction grounded in physical fact to spare her pride. "The willow bark reduces the inflammation. You should have called for Mary to do this. I do not like the maids looking at it." "Then you should have called for me." His thumbs dug deeper into the knot at the base of her neck. The sharp pain suddenly dissolved into a profound, heavy relief. Clara's shoulders dropped an inch. She let her head fall forward slightly, surrendering to the pressure. "I am not a charity case, Sebastian," she said softly to the mirror. His hands stopped moving. He didn't pull away. He flattened his palms against her back, fully covering the worst of the damage. His heat seeped directly into her bones. "I know exactly what you are, Clara," he said, his voice dropping to a low, gravelly rasp. "You are the woman who brought order to my house. You are the woman who terrified the London elite without raising her voice. You are my wife." He leaned down. She felt the warmth of his breath against the nape of her neck. He didn't kiss her scars. He wasn't a poet, and she didn't want flowery romance. Instead, he pressed a firm, lingering kiss to the unmarred skin just below her ear, a deliberate grounding claim on the woman she was now not the victim she had been. "You never have to hide in this house," he told her, stepping back and wiping his hands on a towel. "Not from me." Clara pulled the linen chemise back up, tying the ribbon with steady fingers. She looked at him in the mirror again. The cynical, detached Duke was entirely gone. In his place was a fiercely devoted partner. She turned around in the chair, meeting his dark eyes. The ledgers were balanced. The enemies were banished. The ghosts of her past were finally entirely silent. "I know," she said. "Clara and Sebastian's story proves that the strongest bonds aren't built on poetic declarations, but on shared survival, fierce protection, and absolute respect. What started as a cold transaction transformed into an unbreakable partnership that tore down high society's expectations. What was your favorite moment of Clara's quiet, ruthless revenge against her abusers? Let me know down in the comments. If you love this deeply human, grounded, historical drama, please hit that like button. Share this video with your fellow storytelling addicts and subscribe to the channel so you never miss another dark romantic tale.